Informing America's farmers and ranchers. This is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And welcome into AOA, Agriculture of America. Thanks for joining us on the program today. The coffee cup is full, and we are ready for a lot of different and great conversations here on the show and issues surrounding rural America and agriculture. We're going to talk about them here today on the program, brought to you by our friends at Cenex and Cenex Premium Diesel. Hard work, long hours, and extreme conditions aren't new. Cenex Premium Diesel meets the demands of today's toughest engines. Premium Diesel to keep you going. Learn more at Cenex.com. Coming up here on today's show, in just a second, we're going to talk with the American Soybean Association President, Josh Gackle. In segment two, we're going to hear from the president of South Dakota Farmers Union, Doug Somke. We're going to recap the recent National Farmers Union Convention that was held earlier in the month of March and talk about other issues with Doug coming up here in segment two today. After the bottom of the hour in segment three, Clean Water Act issues, WOTUS issues are still out there in the courts. So we're going to get caught up on a few different cases that are being watched here by some folks in agriculture. Charles Yates with Pacific Legal Foundation is going to join us for a conversation. And then at the end of the show, we're going to talk with Nate Smith, the general manager of Top Dollar Angus. They have a new project called the LC Project, looking at using genomics to kind of look back at the history of your beef cow herd. Very interesting stuff. We're going to get some details on that from Nate coming up here at the end of today's program. First up, though, we are joined here on the show by the president of the American Soybean Association. Josh Gackle's with us here on AOA today. Josh, it's great to hear from you again. Hope you're doing well.
Good morning, Jesse. Yeah, doing well here. We're having a little bit of winter in North Dakota for about the first time this year. So
I was going to say, I'm wondering how much snow is falling in your neck of the woods. You know, it's one of those things that, of course, you know, we go through a nice spring and a quiet winter, and then, well, here we are at the back half of March and getting a little blast of old man winter, right, Josh?
Yeah, we know it can change in a hurry. Had a little bit last night and today, and then another system coming through over the weekend. So we'll see what we end up with.
Yeah, well, hopefully it'll help out some soil moisture in some parts of the upper Midwest. And glad you were able to get home from Washington, D.C. before some of that snow moved in. I know you testified here this week in front of the House Ag Committee talking China. And Josh, just give us some thoughts on how that hearing went. And of course, the big question here is China the number one issue for U.S. agriculture? So talk about this a little bit for us.
Well, so the hearing, yeah, that was on Wednesday, and the focus of the hearing was the threats that China might pose to U.S. agriculture when it comes to land ownership and intellectual property and those types of things. You know, I was there to speak on behalf of ASA and just remind the committee and policymakers that, you know, as they address these really important and significant issues that for U.S. producers and specifically soybean producers, China is our number one market. So whatever policy steps we take here in the U.S., we just need to be mindful of that very important market.
I know there's been so much talk surrounding this, and I believe your comments, as I was looking through some of the testimony, you talked quite a bit about the 2018 tariff war between the U.S. and China and how that in itself had a pretty big impact on U.S. farmers, right?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, that's most of my comments focused around what we experienced in that that trade war in 2018 and 2019 with the tariffs imposed by the U.S. and the retaliatory actions from China. It was, you know, just over a brief time when that started, U.S. soy lost about $2 per bushel in the market. So just reminding them of that history and what that might lead to, you know, if even more aggressive steps were taken down the road here as far as tariffs across the board, what that might mean for producers here in the U.S.
Well, and thinking about this, I know Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack has had comments here in the last few days saying that we should maybe have a little more caution surrounding some of the China rhetoric just because they're such a huge trading partner. So I guess In summation of what you heard and what folks are talking about there on Capitol Hill right now, I mean, what do we need to keep our eye on? What do growers need to keep in mind, or what do growers need to be telling folks in Congress as they're looking at some of these different, you know, different legislation and things like that surrounding U.S.-China relations, Josh?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things there, and what U.S. Soy is doing across the board with the American Soybean Association, the U.S. Soybean Export Council. What we have been doing for years is trying to find to diversify the market and find other places for us to sell our products. But we're doing that, and you know, we work in 112 markets across the world in promoting U.S. soy. But the scale of the China market can't be replaced overnight. So we need to try and protect that market while at the same time trying to find new markets. So I focused also on, investing through the Farm Bill, prioritizing trying to get a Farm Bill done this year that also invests money into the market access program and the foreign market development program, so that not just U.S. soy, but all farm groups, all farm commodities, U.S. producers, and everything that we grow can find new markets. So trying to get that Farm Bill done where we can invest in those programs as well.
Well, thinking about a Farm Bill, Josh, as you were in D.C. here this week, did you hear any chatter from lawmakers about a Farm Bill getting done this year? Or are we going to see an extension of the 2018 law again? I mean, what was some of that that hallway chatter there on Capitol Hill, if you heard anything?
Well, I can say that the committee chairs and the ranking members from both the House and the Senate, so both committees and both sides of the political aisle, are still focused on getting a bill done this year, and we're promoting that as well, or advocating for that. American Soybean Association is doing that. We really need to get a five-year reauthorization done, and sooner rather than later. So what I heard there is, if this drags on further into 2024 and getting closer to the election season, it just gets harder and harder to get a bill done. So, I think that the chairs and the leading members of those committees are trying to get something done sooner rather than later. But it gets complicated the further we get into the season here.
Yeah, it does definitely get complicated the further we kind of kick the can down the road and get towards this presidential election, things like that. Josh, always good to talk with you. Any final thoughts, anything else you are talking with lawmakers about or watching right now from the American Soybean Association? Anything final for us? Got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, well, we're talking a lot about biofuels and crop protection. Those would probably be the two other areas. A lot of things going on in those areas, trying to make sure that we get some guidance related to sustainable aviation fuel so that feedstock provided by U.S. growers can qualify for those types of programs. And then in the crop protection space, talking about regulatory issues from EPA to make sure that farmers have the tools that we need to grow this crop and protect this crop in the next growing season.
Well, we'll save that for another conversation. The president of the American Soybean Association, Josh Gackle. Josh, thanks for joining us on AOA today. Have a great one. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jesse.
All right, coming up next on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Doug Somke with the South Dakota Farmers Union joins us next on AOA.
Challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Join us the first Wednesday of every month on AOA for the latest episode of the Monthly Grind with our friends at the National Corn Growers Association. We'll discuss the latest topics surrounding the corn industry, the relationships between corn and other parts of the agricultural supply chain, the newest initiatives and partnerships from NCGA's Market Development Action Team, and much more. That's the first Wednesday of every month for the Monthly Grind on AOA. It's a show you don't want to miss. When news happens in agriculture or when the markets are moving, we've got you covered as your trusted voice in agriculture. The team at the American Ag Network has the knowledge and experience to keep you informed on the issues impacting farmers and ranchers. We've got you covered on air, online, and on demand. Find the American Ag Network on your favorite social media platforms and also follow the American Ag Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We are the American Ag Network.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Get the latest bonus interviews, exclusive content, and more with the American Ag Today podcast. Just search for American Ag Today and give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Teachers are dynamic leaders, shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Achieving this takes skill and expertise. They're tireless explorers, creatively discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, experimenting, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, and connecting with each other. Leading by example. Experience the unique joy of helping students thrive. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready to begin? Explore teaching at teach.org, a campaign supported by the U.S. Department of Education, teach.org, and 1 million teachers of color.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And thanks for sticking with us here on AOA today, brought to you by our friends at Cenex. They're Cenex Premium Diesels and Premium Lubricants. You can trust your local experts at Cenex and head down there to find out what products they have for you and your operation. And if you don't know where your local Cenex location is, well, you can find them very easily online. Just go to Cenex.com. Again, that's Cenex.com to learn more about their premium diesel and premium lubricants with your friends at Cenex. I know we are working to connect with the president of the South Dakota Farmers Union, Doug Somke, here on the show. In the meantime, a couple different news headlines we're watching as well. This one caught my eye here today. While inflation has eased somewhat, food prices are still high. That's no surprise. A study conducted by the University of Illinois and Purdue University, it asked consumers what type of companies they believe are behind high food prices. Well, according to Brenna Ellison, Purdue economist and co-author of the study, quote, consumers are frustrated with many downstream actors like food manufacturers, grocery stores, and restaurants, feeling these groups are overcharging them, end quote. So an interesting survey there, the study showing that a lot of consumers feel that farmers were the least to blame, and they're putting a lot of the blame on food companies, restaurants, etc., overcharging them, and that's why food prices are still too high. So an interesting study there from Purdue University and the University of Illinois. All right, joining us now here on AOA, pleased to connect again with the president of the South Dakota Farmers Union, Doug Somke, is with us. Doug, it's great to talk to you. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, thanks, Jesse. Sorry, I was out of the side-by-side when you called. We're cabining, and it's a little busy right now.
Hey, that comes first, so we won't take too much of your time here today. I know things are busy, and I'm sure you're having to deal with some winter weather kind of blasting through here a little bit too in the back half of March. So we'll keep the conversation as quick as possible. Just for starters, Doug, wanted to kind of recap your time out at the National Farmers Union Convention earlier in the month. You guys were in Arizona, and I know you talked about a lot of issues. Can you give us kind of a recap and rundown on things?
Yeah, you know, Secretary Vilsack was out and, of course, reiterated the fact that they're going to put the, you know, right through the born, bred, and processed in the United States label, voluntary, of course, yet we're still going to continue to work to make that a mandatory thing. But, you know, that was a good thing to hear that they're going to finally start implementing something like that. You know, with the cattle business right now, not only that, I mean, all the meat prices, but, you know, we're at an all-time low right now for cattle and also all-time low of processing. So this is some serious stuff we need to be considering and making sure that, you know, we know where this stuff comes from, Jesse. And that's, you know, I think that's what the American people want. And I know that's what agriculture wants. And, you know, then the right to repair issue is still a pretty big thing for us. I mean, a few states have implemented something like this, but we really need something on a national level. You know, I know our friends at the Farm Bureau have made a agreement with, you know, some of the major manufacturers, but the fact of the matter is, Jesse, it's our equipment. It's our intelligence that's in there. And first of all, we really need to know what they're doing with that stuff too. I mean, every time we go up and down that field with whatever product it is, we're recording, and data is rich right now. I mean, everybody knows that that's the future. So if you got data, you're gonna have a good go of it, but you can't be just sharing it for just the will of anyone. We got to be paid for what we're doing too. So, and it's our information again, right? So, yeah. I think the big thing about the convention was just the fact that we really came together as a group this year on some of the main issues, such as net metering and things like that, that didn't really make any special orders, but you know, really is important to our rural electrics and the rural way of life.
Well, great thoughts there, Doug, and I appreciate the recap. And, you know, thinking about the first thing you mentioned with Secretary Vilsack and the meat labels and the voluntariness of that and things like that, you know, and just Thursday we saw in the Senate, Senator Tester and Senator Round's bill on Paraguayan beef, that continuing that CRA, I should say, was passed in the Senate. That's moving to the House. And, you know, so issues like that, knowing where our meat comes from, where our food comes from, those continue to be issues at the forefront here for a lot of folks in the livestock industry. Right, Doug?
They really are. And, you know, the thing about it, Jesse, they're not political, right? I mean, these are policy issues. These are things that cross the aisle both ways. And again, I'm very proud of the fact that our Senator Rounds and Senator Tester are working on such a thing. I mean, when the president announced what he was going to do there, I mean, I'm not going to kid you, we had a lot of calls from people wondering what the heck, why are we doing this? Why is the president of the United States doing this to us? And it was a concern. So I'm really glad that they've taken this on. But again, like I said, this reaches across the aisles, and we shouldn't get bogged down in politics over such important things as our food safety.
Another issue I want to talk to you about, Doug, switching gears here a little bit, is the continued discussion surrounding carbon pipelines. And I'm hearing a lot about, you know, this carbon capture and carbon intensity scores, CI scores, and how it relates to, you know, thinking about sustainable aviation fuel and more. And I know this is a hot button issue across the upper Midwest. We saw the Navigator CO2 project, of course, canceled. Summit still continuing with their project. What's the latest from your perspective on this whole discussion surrounding carbon pipelines, especially in your state?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because it is an important issue, and it's important for many reasons. I mean, first of all, you know, the property rights issue is a big thing that we've been trying to protect our landowners and property owners with. But also, you know, understanding the CO2 score. And right now, actually today, we're holding a meeting in Lake Preston, South Dakota at noon for people to learn about, you know, how this works and how do you score it? How does someone keep track of it? That kind of thing. So if you're interested, we'll be doing these across the state. So if anyone's interested, you know, contact the office and find one that's close to you or you know, something that works into your time. But we're going to continue to bring that to the forefront, because let's admit it, we're not going to hide from this type of thing. And it's very important issue for the future. But as far as the Summit pipeline issue, there is just a appeals hearing for the at the Supreme Court on Tuesday, I believe it was. in Aberdeen, and there was some pretty good questions by the justices, and they're actually asking the Summit Carbon Solutions to give them the contracts that these ethanol plants have signed with them. I think the biggest thing is to determine who owns that compressed carbon going through the pipeline and up and going into the ground. I think that's going to determine whether it is a common carrier issue or not. And boy, I'll tell you what, I from the ethanol plant board members that I've talked to, and I haven't read a contract, so I'm only going by hearsay, right? But it's my understanding that they do not own that carbon going through the pipeline because they didn't want any of the liability after it left. So that tells me that it's Summit Carbon Solutions, so therefore it is not a common carrier. But I'm not a lawyer, Jesse. I'm just a common, dirt farmer, South Dakotan. And the questions they were asking sure were good questions, leaning towards the property owners' rights. And we actually been visiting ever since session wrapped down about the eminent domain issue too. That's another big thing that we need to fix in South Dakota. It's interesting that in 2016, our lieutenant governor, who was a senator at the time, carried a law that said that eminent domain could not be used for economic development, and it passed, and it got signed into law. And here we are today fighting over that we want to be able to use eminent domain for economic development. And he's been a strong proponent against the property owner now on that fact. And it just kind of goes to show you, watch out where the money's coming from, folks, because that's usually the way our legislation goes.
Doug, real quick, 30 seconds. Do you think, in your view, that we're going to be able to find some sort of common ground on carbon pipelines?
Boy, from what I was hearing from the Supreme Court, I think we can work on it, but it's not going to happen overnight, Jesse. That's the real problem. We got property rights issues, and then you also got the who owns that carbon. That's it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep watching the news and the conversations that are ongoing. And Doug, we'll let you get back to calving. That is definitely more important. We appreciate the time, though. Thanks for joining us here on AOA today. And best of luck with the snow moving in and more. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Doug Somke, president of the South Dakota Farmers Union, joining us here on AOA. All right, up next, we're going to talk about issues surrounding the Clean Water Act and WOTUS with Charles Yates from Pacific Legal Foundation. He joins us next on AOA, brought to you by Cenex.
Every day, our brave military men and women, along with their families, make tremendous sacrifices for our freedom. Patriotic Hearts, a nonprofit organization, is dedicated to supporting these heroes and their families in their times of need. By donating your unwanted card to Patriotic Hearts, you'll be supporting job transition and job fair programs, veteran entrepreneurship, counseling, and retreats for combat veterans and their spouses. Call 800-560-3870. You'll receive a tax deduction, and we'll arrange a free pickup at your convenience. Imagine the difference you can make in the lives of those who have given so much for our country. Your card donation will directly impact military families, veterans, providing them with the support they desperately need. Call 800-560-3870. You can become a part of something bigger. Join us in our mission to uplift and honor our military community. Call 800-560-3870 to donate your unwanted card.
You're listening to AOA. Here's a check of the markets for the American Ag Network. I'm Jody Heemstra. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's weekly corn export sales report had 1.19 million metric tons of corn booked during the week that ended March 14th. That is at the high end of the expected range, but was down 8% for the week and was under the 3.1 million metric tons sold during the same week last year. Total commitments were up to 41.7 million metric ton. That is 19% ahead of last year's pace. The Energy Information Administration reported ethanol producers averaged 1.046 million barrels per day through the week that ended March 15th. That was a 22,000 Thursday's export sales report for soybeans was in line with expectations and was 86% higher than the four-week average. It's interesting to note that Chinese sales increased by 11 million bushels, while 22 million bushels were shipped to China last week. After all the discussion about the Chinese economy and competition from Brazil, the discussion of Chinese cancellations of U.S. soybeans has not yet come to pass. Thursday's export sales for wheat showed a net reduction in old crop sales due to last week's Chinese cancellation. We did have new crop sales of 10.5 million bushels. That was three times higher than the previous largest new crop sales week. Total outstanding sales plus year-to-date shipments of corn are 72.8% of the U.S. Department of Agriculture forecast. That's 2.9 percentage points above the 15-year average for the 28th week of the year. Total outstanding sales plus year-to-date shipments of soybeans are 85.8% of the USDA forecast. That's 3.9 percentage points below the 15-year average for the 28th week of the year. Inexpensive corn and soybean meal prices are also supporting livestock production profitability, which helps feed demand. You're listening to AOA. I'm Jody Heemstra with this check at markets for the American Ag Network.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section, when dad injured his back, when your basketball star tore his ACL. Opioids helped with the pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Opioids are powerful pain-reducing prescription medicines, but most people who are prescribed opioids don't finish their prescriptions. So millions of unused opioids are sitting in homes across the country. And tragically, more than 100 Americans die every day from overdoses involving opioids. What can you do to protect your family? Remove the risk of unused opioids from your home. Pills, patches, or syrups in drawers, purses, and cabinets, anywhere they might be hiding. To find out how to dispose of them properly, visit www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel and Premium Lubricants. Trust your local experts at your nearest Cenex location or visit them online at cenex.com. Well, right now, we continue to follow a number of cases related to the Clean Water Act and the Waters of the U.S. rule and some of the administration's disregard for the decision in the Sackett versus EPA case. Well, we've had him on the show with us before, and he is here to catch us up on a multitude of cases that they are working on. Attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation, Charles Yates, is with us here today on AOA. Charles, it is great to talk with you again. Hope you're doing well. Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing great, Jesse. Thanks for having me back on. It's good as always to talk to you.
Well, as I mentioned, we have multiple cases that we are following here, all kind of surrounding the Clean Water Act in one way or another. So maybe just set the stage for us. Can you get us up to speed on what cases we're watching and some of the latest here? I'm seeing two, three cases. As you kind of told me before we jumped on the air, the plot continues to thicken a little bit here surrounding the Clean Water Act, Charles.
Yes, that's right, Jesse. So, as your listeners, you are aware, so we got the Sackett decision in the middle of 2023, which clearly and unequivocally rebuked the EPA and the United States Army Corps of Engineers for their continued illegal regulation of private land. And we've seen a phenomenon that's often occurred after a Supreme Court decision like this. Sackett wasn't the first time that these agencies were rebuked by the Supreme Court for their limitless view of their authority. And after previous decisions, what they always did, they seemed to go back to the drawing board and work out a way to continue ratcheting up their own power and sort of wiggle out what they've been instructed to do by the highest court in the land. And the Sackett decision, it seems, as the last 9 months has played out, has been no exception. The agencies have gone back to the drawing board and they've doubled down, and they're continuing to implausibly and illegally assert jurisdiction over all manner of dry land features pursuant to the Clean Water Act. They've done so through a general regulation implementing the rule, and they're continuing to do so in individual cases, enforcement actions, approved jurisdictional determinations.
Well, looking at some of these cases, I believe two in North Carolina alone, and then another one out here as well. Let's maybe, if you can give us some details on each one of these cases. I know Ward versus the U.S., I know that's one that was kind of started a whole conversation to get you back on the show here, I believe.
Yes. So the PLF is currently involved in three cases. As you said, two of them in North Carolina and one of them is out of Iowa, the Ward case. So I'll start with the North Carolina cases.
Okay.
The first of the North Carolina cases is a case called White versus EPA. And what this is a general pre-enforcement challenge to the general regulation or definition of WOTUS that the agencies finalized in September of last year. So Mr. White is a North Carolina landowner who is currently defending an enforcement action. He's being victimized by EPA and the United States Army Corps of Engineers. And this case here is him challenging their general authority or their claimed authority to assert jurisdiction over his property and property like it around the country. So it's a general challenge to the illegal response to the Sackett case. The second case in North Carolina is United States versus Valentine. And that's an enforcement action. In that case, Pacific Legal Foundation is representing a family, a timber family from North Carolina, who have been sued by the United States for alleged violations of the Clean Water Act. And the government's theory in that case, again, rests on this broad and illegal view of their authority, their jurisdiction. So in that case, we're defending against this broad and illegal response to Sackett and asking the court to dismiss the case on the grounds that the government simply hasn't even alleged facts to demonstrate that they even have authority over this property under the Sackett decision. And then going to the third case out of Iowa, this isn't a case in federal court. Here we have a landowner, Mr. Ward, Dan Ward, who he wants to build a pond on his property, improve his property for him so that him and his grandchildren and family can enjoy it. To do so, he went to the Army Corps of Engineers and sought an approved jurisdictional determination, essentially a determination as to whether or not his property is jurisdictional. Under the Sackett decision, there can be no plausible argument it is, but the Army Corps of Engineers came back and said that a tiny, narrow little groove that occasionally has puddles of water in it after rainfall is in fact a relatively permanent water under the Sackett test. So again, it looks like business as usual. In Sackett, the Supreme Court clearly and unequivocally held the agencies can no longer regulate features like this. They can't contrive jurisdiction based on puddles or ponds or mud, tiny grooves or depressions on the land. They can only regulate relatively permanent waters, something that you or I would look at, stream, ocean, river, lake, or the like, and say, hey, that's a water. The federal government may have an interest in regulating it. But the Ward case out of Iowa demonstrates that the agencies simply haven't got the message. They're still continuing to assert this staggeringly broad authority. Now, in that case, we have administratively appealed this determination to a higher level within the Army Corps. And we hope that the Army Corps sees the errors of its ways, that this depression is clearly not a river or navigable water under the Sackett decision and reverse. But if they don't, that too may ripen into a case in federal court if the Army Corps simply refuses to heed the Sackett decision.
Well, Charles, I mean, all great thoughts and good things to think about here. You know, for me, and I think for a lot of folks across the country and rural America, you know, it's amazing that we continue to have this fight over WOTUS and the Clean Water Act, especially after a Sackett decision that we saw that was pretty clear. You know, for instance, I'm not going to walk out my driveway and assume that a puddle after a rainstorm could be regulated by the EPA, but it seems like the EPA and the administration wants to continue to have overreach and overregulation, and that really seems to be at the heart of this. And I know it's got a lot of folks, farmers, ranchers, and more concerned here, Charles.
That's correct. It really is a great concern. That, I mean, it just shows that the flagrant disregard for Congress and the Supreme Court on the part of these agencies. I mean, this has been going on for 50 years. For 50 years, they've been continuing to ratchet up their own authority, broadly and implausibly interpreting that term navigable waters to mean basically anything they want to regulate, to the point where they've become and consider themselves to be general land use regulators. Sackett really brought that trend to a definitive halt. The Sackett decision couldn't have been any more clear. The judgment was unanimous. No justice on the Supreme Court would have upheld the agency's theory of their authority. And we got a clear majority decision which set forth a definitive standard for when they can regulate. Streams, oceans, rivers, lakes, or the like, and wetlands that are indistinguishable from such features, not isolated wetlands miles away. But the agencies, they've gone back to the drawing board and they're trying to work out a way to wiggle out of this. And it's really important, again, to note, I noted at the outset, they've done this every time. In 2001, they lost on this issue in a case called Solid Waste Agency of Northern Cook County versus U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. They ignored that decision, continued regulating. Rapanos versus United States in 2006, same thing. Majority of the Supreme Court held their claimed authority was too broad. They went back to the drawing board and we got the mess of what the last 15 years was, the Obama administration's clean water rule, etc. Sackett comes around and they appear to be doing precisely the same thing. And really, it's incumbent on the federal courts again to intervene and to say, no, Sackett means what it says. You don't have authority to regulate these areas.
Well, Charles, from your legal perspective, from an attorney perspective, if, say, farmers and ranchers have any sort of question on their operations, I would have to think that they would want to make sure they try to cross all their T's and dot all their I's and do everything they can to try and avoid having an issue. I mean, what would you tell folks if they're looking at any sort of situation like this on their operation?
Well, and you identify a really important issue here, and this is something the Supreme Court noted. The Clean Water Act is a draconian statute. You can be fined millions of dollars or even sent to prison for even an accidental violation of it. It's a strict liability statute. These agencies can and do enforce the statute regardless of whether an individual knew what they were doing was potentially in a regulated area. This raises serious due process concerns, and that's something the Supreme Court noted. One of the key reasons why the Supreme Court rejected the agency's broad theory is for precisely this reason. What about the ordinary farmer, rancher, landowner who simply wants to just plow a field, do something typical or ordinary on their land, and all of a sudden they could be sent to federal prison? And so that's really why it's so important that federal courts need to intervene again. The agencies cannot continue to get away with this. They cannot continue to say, well, we'll know a navigable water when we see it, and you better just wait and see and pray that we don't target you. So again, I think it goes through the burden this places on the regulated public and the risk that the regulated public faces makes it all the more important that the Sackett decision is adhered to by these agencies.
Well, I know folks can stay up to date on these cases, pacificlegal.org. Charles, before we let you go, anything final you would want to mention or reiterate to folks listening in as we continue to face these issues surrounding the Clean Water Act?
Yes, just a final point. When the Clean Water Act was passed by Congress in 1972, the agencies were granted a limited authority to regulate the navigable waters defined as the waters of the United States. Since then, the agencies, and again, really important to note, this is a limited grant of authority. This is not a boundless grant of authority for them to become general land use regulators. That definition is a limitation on their authority. The agencies for 50 years have flipped that on its head. They've continued to ratchet up their own authority with no regard for the intent of Congress. And now they're doing it again in flagrant violation of what the Supreme Court has told them.
Well, again, pacificlegal.org for more information. Charles Yates, attorney with Pacific Legal Foundation. Thanks for joining us here on AOA today, Charles. It's always good to talk with you. We will catch up with you again soon. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jesse. Appreciate it.
All right, up next here on AOA, brought to you by Cenex, we'll talk with Nate Smith from Top Dollar Angus on the way right after this.
You can't escape a traffic jam. Know what else you can't escape? Seasonal allergies. And you might think you can avoid that coffee stain until... Oh, really? You can't escape a lot of things in life, but you can escape prediabetes. Prediabetes captures 1 in 3 adults. There are usually no signs of prediabetes. In fact, most people don't even know they have it. But with early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Take action by taking the 1-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. You might not be able to escape having this song stuck in your head, but you can escape prediabetes. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org today. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
My name is Ariel. When I arrived in the U.S. at 19, I struggled to find job opportunities without my high school diploma. My entire life changed when I took a chance and got my high school diploma at age 22. Everything I have, my education, my career, my marriage, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and my teachers. They were with me every step of the way, helping with my English and math, making sure I push through all the challenges.
Ariel, your success proves that what I'm doing as a teacher has real meaning.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
Education was the key that unlocked all my opportunities.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is Around the Table, where we explore the benefits of cooperative ownership. Today, Ryan Hageman, an agronomy and fertilizer expert with CHS, will discuss the value of nitrogen stabilizers. Now, Ryan, nitrogen is critical for a healthy crop, but it's highly susceptible to loss. Why is it important to keep nitrogen in place, and what are the risks?
Any green growing crop needs nitrogen or a supplemental source of nitrogen added to maximize their production and maximize their efficiency. Whether it's the dry form of urea, liquid form of UAN, or anhydrous, each one of those products is susceptible to through nitrogen loss just through biological processes themselves that are naturally found in the environment.
Well, what nitrogen stabilizers are available?
So there's two main sources of nitrogen stabilizers that are available. It's either a urease inhibitor or a nitrification inhibitor. So the urease inhibitors stop the volatilization process by stopping the urease enzyme from breaking the nitrogen into the ammonium form, and it's released in the atmosphere. The nitrification inhibitors stop nitrosanomous bacteria from breaking down the nitrogen source into a nitrate form, which it makes it more prone to the denitrification or the leaching.
Well, Ryan, what's the value of protecting your nitrogen investment?
So one of the major input costs for a grower can be their nitrogen fertilizer expense. So corn plants take up their maximum amount of nitrogen late June through July. So we have to make sure that that nitrogen is available and does not volatilize, denitrification, or leach in that period. So it has to be there for that maximum production, and it will help maximize the grower's return on investment by making sure that that nitrogen is there late enough in the season when the corn plant needs it.
Thank you for joining us Around the Table. Learn more about the benefits of cooperative ownership at cooperativeownership.com.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Get the latest bonus interviews, exclusive content, and more with the American Ag Today podcast. Just search for American Ag Today and give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
Welcome back to AOA, brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel. Downtimes and waste, keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Cenex Premium Diesel fuel. Learn more at Cenex.com. Well, right now on the show, we want to talk about measuring genetic progress in a commercial beef herd, a new project just wrapped up by Top Dollar Angus. Very interesting stuff that we wanted to talk about. So joining us for a conversation today, the general manager of Top Dollar Angus, Nate Smith, is with us here on AOA. Nate, thanks for the time. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing really well today, Jesse, and I appreciate you guys reaching out and giving us the time this morning.
Yeah, I saw this come across my desk, and I was very intrigued to learn more about this. So give us kind of the background on the LC Ranch project. Tell us more about measuring genetic progress in a beef herd and what you guys just wrapped up there at Top Dollar Angus.
Yep, I'd be happy to. LC Ranch is a commercial ranch down in Texas. That they're a smaller operation, but they'd inherited this ranch, and the genetics on the cows, they just weren't sure where they were, and they wanted to see what kind of improvements they could make in a smaller generation interval, which that worked out well for us because that's what we're all about at Top Dollar Angus, is genetics, excuse me. So what we did is we were able to utilize the Neogen Igenity Beef Test, which is a commercial DNA test that tests 10 traits, including carcass data. And you get back a 1 to 10 score. So then with the ability to use that, we picked out a high carcass merit bull. In this case, it was a Gardner Angus bull, and bred those cows with that and measured not only the cow's DNA scores and their values genetically, but after the calves were actually born, we were able to measure that genetic profile on those and compare to see what kind of differences we can make within one generation of sire breeding.
Very, very cool technology. And, you know, thinking about using genomics, Nate, I mean, it seems like I'm hearing talk about this more and more throughout the cattle industry. It just feels like it's becoming more and more prevalent to kind of look at the history and look through the generations of a beef herd and more, isn't it?
It is. You know, nearly four decades ago, we started relying on EPDs, but as with any kind of technology in any of the ag sectors, we were able to improve that. And within the last decade or so, the ability to genomically test animals really came about. And just like adding GPS on a tractor, it increased the efficiency and also the timeline to get data back and made it easier to measure the actual machine underneath the hide of cattle. And it's continuing to pick up more and more speed, primarily because, once again, we're making cattle more efficient. And with, of course, what we've seen in value, we want to make sure that we really deliver the best product we can, because we're starting to shorten up numbers as well. And we've really got to focus on what we're able to provide for all sectors of the industry.
Yeah, and thinking about this and looking at this whole LC Ranch project and everything that you guys do, for instance, at Top Dollar Angus and other operations across the country, I think that, you know, stuff like this, research like this, and to your point, increasing the efficiency in our herds, I feel like that kind of data and findings, it could really help in herd management here in years to come, can it, Nate?
It sure can. Probably the biggest thing is having the knowledge sitting before us and really being able to make decisions on more than just what we think we have and what we think the value is, and really pinpointing the basis of it. It also gives producers the ability to understand what direction they're headed without a whole lot of cost and without waiting 5 to 10 years to see those calves. This gives you at least a piece of the puzzle to help provide more value moving forward.
Well, we are talking with Nate Smith, the general manager of Top Dollar Angus, here today on AOA. Learn more about the LC Ranch project, and very, very insightful stuff. And Nate, I'm sure if folks wanted to learn more about this project or learn more about the things that you guys are doing at Top Dollar Angus, I know they could find you guys very easily online, can't they, Nate?
They sure can. We're at topdollarangus.com. It's really simple to get through. And with any questions, you just make sure to fill out our email request, and I can sure answer any of those for you. And as always, reaching out personally is fine. I love chatting about anything within the beef industry. I've been fortunate enough to work in the feed yard side and on the cow-calf side as well. So any kind of questions, I'm always happy to discuss.
Well, this is definitely fascinating data and a great project here looking at genetic progress in a commercial beef herd, the LC Ranch Project. And it's stuff that I think we're going to keep watching as this evolves more and more. And Nate, real quick, before I let you go, should ask you too, just about the overall size of the beef cattle herd here in the U.S. I know there's been a lot of talk about it. Of course, we're watching another Cattle on Feed report set to be released Friday afternoon to tell us maybe where we're at. I mean, what's your view here? Got about a minute of just where things stand with rebuilding the beef cattle herd.
Yep. I think that we've been fortunate. There's been some relief to the droughts in some of our areas. We'll continue to add back females and increase the base cow numbers. It will probably be a little bit more difficult because of generation change included in that calculation. We know that one of the biggest struggles is labor as well, and you've got to have labor to run more cattle. But I think we'll build back. It may take some time, and we're for sure going to build back better with better beef cows in general.
Well, again, find more information, topdollarangus.com. With that, general manager of Top Dollar Angus, Nate Smith. Nate, thanks so much for joining us here on AOA today. We appreciate the conversation. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, sir.
Once again, Nate Smith there with Top Dollar Angus joining us here on AOA. We're out of time on the show, brought to you by Cenex and Cenex Premium Diesels and Premium Lubricants. Learn more online. Just go to Cenex.com. Have a great rest of your day. I'm Jesse Allen. Thanks for listening to AOA.
Challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Every Tuesday, we're sitting around the table, sponsored by CHS, where we'll be talking with folks from throughout the cooperative system. Join us as we discover what makes cooperatives unique when there are more options to do business than ever before. We'll learn how farmers and ranchers like you benefit from a system where decisions are made by the members that own it. Tune in every Tuesday for Around the Table, or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more.